amateur radio in the valley and around the world. Whether you're already a ham or have always wanted to be one, you'll find out about interesting events and issues regarding amateur radio. Your host is Lynn Winkler, KB7LPW. To get in touch with Lynn, call 230-2755. That's 230-2755. Or outside the local area, call 1-800-293-KFNN. Ham Radio and More is brought to you by AEA Incorporated, Wallpaper World, and Ken Nichols. Now, here's the host of Ham Radio and More, Lynn Winkler.
CQ, 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 Arizona, and welcome to Ham Radio and More, the only show of its kind still in America. I'm your host, Lynn Winkler, KB7LPW, and today's show is sponsored by AEA Incorporated, Wallpaper World, and Ken Nichols of Linda Brock Autumnwall. My guest today is Dan Meredith, a frequent visitor to these microphones. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks, Lynn.
N7MRP. He's becoming more and more known, Mr. Packet, as I call him, but then, you know, it's better than some of the things some people call. But anyway, today we're going to be talking about Packet. We're going to be talking about nodes. We're going to get a lot of information out, as in reference to commands and what certain messages you receive from nodes mean, how to use them, how to go from one place to another. We might try a scenario of going from Phoenix to New York or California or something, show how we can go from node to node. But it's really interesting, and we'll be discussing that in a little while with Dan. Our phone number today is 230-2755, 230-2755, or 1-800-293-KFNN. And you're more than welcome. In fact, we invite you and we encourage you to give us a call and ask us a question. I ask Dan a question. He loves to be stumped. And, ask him about protocols and stuff on Packet. He likes those kinds of questions. And anything else, because he's twitching his nose. He looks like Samantha from Bewitched. But anyway, anything and everything about Packet and the digital modes. Or if you have something that you want to buy, sell, or trade that's an amateur-related item, we'll take that also. You're welcome to call in with that. Be happy to try and sell it for you or find that particular item that you need. The next event that's coming up, of course, and I'm going to harp on this for the next couple of weeks, is the ARRL National Convention. Now, a friend of mine, I thought that the host hotel there is the Marriott at the L.A. airport, and I was under the impression, because I was told by somebody that they were all sold out. But my friend just called last week and got a room without any problem, and the rates aren't really that expensive. I mean, they're not $5, but they're, I think they were $75 or $80. Anyway, there's still rooms available, and of course there's a lot of hotels on that street across from the L.A. airport, and that's the ARRL National Convention. Anything about amateur radio and everything about amateur radio will be there. I certainly encourage each and every one of you to get in a car or take an airplane and fly over there. It's a three-day event. It takes place August 20th through the 23rd. I've harped on this before, but it is really a big event. It's not a division event. It's not a local event. It is the national convention for the ARRL. And we, of course, discussed it last week when we had Steve Mansfield from the ARRL on, and got good response on that show. I was very, very happy about it. Anyway, he talked about the convention coming up, and there's going to be over 50 different seminars at that convention. And, of course, they're all free, and you're welcome to attend them. They're also going to have the only things that aren't free is the banquets and the luncheons, of course. They're going to have an auction. They're going to have transmitter hunts. They're going to have an ARRL, they're going to an FCC forums, they're going to have seminars on RFI, which is interference, of course, but we know we never cause interference. There's going to be DX seminars and forums, contest forums, antenna seminars, digital forums. Did you hear that, Dan? Digital forums. Aries, RACES, NTS, AMSAT, QCWA, MIRS. There's going to be a legal forum, amateur television, and much, much more. So it's really a large, large, large event, really. And if you're interested in amateur radio, they're even going to have VE testing there. If you want to have anything to do with amateur radio, if you're interested in it at all, go there, be involved. And again, it's August 20th through the 23rd. It's $10 if you it's $12. That's even gone. It's now $15. The early bird registration was $10. That was before May 15th. It's $12 before August 1st, and since today is August the 2nd, it's $15. That's $15, but that entitles you for 3 full days into all the seminars and events. They do have a Saturday breakfast, a Saturday luncheon, a Saturday banquet, and a Sunday breakfast. That's all available. And the phone number of to get involved is 1-800-322-CORP. 1-800-322-CORP, or directly to the Marriott is 1-800-228-9290. 1-800-228-9290. Oh, and don't forget, Saturday night at midnight, they're going to have the Wolf Hung. And again, I that's just... Dan, are you ever participate with the Wolf Hung? No.
Mm-mm.
The Wolf Hung is no joking. I mean, this is serious. Is the super secret amateur radio group and organization. A lot of people are not aware of the super secret Wolf Hung. And, of course, I could lose my membership in good standing if I talk too much about it because it is super secret, you know, with our special handshake. But I can't talk too much about it. But it takes place, the initiation, Saturday night at midnight. And it really is something to partake in. I was lucky enough to be there at the Scottsdale one. So, Dan, it's worth flying over just for that.
Okay, Len.
Tomorrow night, the West Valley Amateur Radio Club has their next meeting. And I have to apologize if there is somebody from the West Valley Amateur Radio Club listening and wants to call us at 230-2755. Or 1-800-293-KFNN if you're out real far west. Tell us what the program is, because I don't have that here, and I apologize. But that's tomorrow night, the West Valley Club. Then, this week, of course, being the first week of the month, is always a strong local club week. So we have the first Monday of each month, the West Valley Amateur Radio Club has their meeting. Then, this Wednesday night, the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club has their meeting, and of course that's at the Scottsdale Senior Center. It starts at 7:30, and our presentation, our speaker this month, will be from APS, and he's going to be talking, he's going to bring his field engineer also, and there's going to be two of them. They're going to be talking about lightning and grounding and your antennas and how interference gets involved and everything about AP, you know, that we can find out from APS. It's going to be really interesting. I've only had that booked since Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club hoodwinked me into being their program man for this year. But anyway, and I've only had it since March. And then I find out that the following day, Thursday, now I'm nothing against the Central Arizona DX Association because I'm a member, they're having their meeting at the Para Club at 7 o'clock in Tempe. They're also having Ron Chambers of APS, who's going to talk there. So I had him first, guys, and it's just ironic that he's... And they're only going to have one. We're going to have two people from APS, so, you know.
Cliff Bailey.
Yeah. How'd you know?
Because I know him personally.
Oh, okay. Well, he's supposed to be very knowledgeable. So we're going to... Anyway, if you can't make it Wednesday, go to the Para Clubs, Central Arizona DX Association on Thursday, and they'll have an APS special presentation also. So both days will be pretty good. And also Thursday, of course, is the tech committee meets for ARA. you know, they meet at Denny's, I believe. I'm not even sure. But anyway, that's the ARA on Thursday. That's a tech committee. I think they have a tech committee. Yeah, every Thursday, or the first Thursday of every month, I believe. Anyway, those are the meetings this week. If anybody wants more information, you know, you can give me a call, or I can give you, if you can call in, and I'll read off phone numbers. But try to join an organization, a club, a local club. You'll find out so many things. It's amazing at each of these club meetings. It's not boring, procedural meetings. They have substance and information, and it's a lot of fun. And you can buy raffle tickets and win prizes. That's right. I never win, but I did win once some, Crazy Glue, I think it was. Okay, I just received the newest edition of the ARRL letter dated July 27th, and I've been harping for the last few shows about how the FCC is really coming down hard, and I mean hard, on people. You know, they always thought they could fool around the frequencies and do things that they're not supposed to do. Well, the FCC is now playing hard ball. We're going to do something if you keep doing it. Now they're giving fines that are unbelievable. And here's what happened recently. I've read a few, but here's a new one. San Francisco area amateurs were instrumental in identifying one of their own as a jammer. And they have come forward following the issuance of a $15,000 fine by the FCC. According to the $15,000, I mean, you're starting to play with some heavy numbers here. According to the FCC, from October 1990 to July 1991, their San Francisco office was contacted by at least 15 public service agencies, including amateurs, complaining of harmful interference. See, sometimes it's not hams that are doing it, or there are hams, but they're doing it illegally. The jammer was using cross-band techniques to retransmit amateur and commercial channels. Although the jammer was identified as James Winstead, KK6SM, of Redwood City, and confronted in July 91, the FCC did not reveal his identity until issuing the notice of apparent liability in May of this year. Part of the success of finding this individual, Phil Kane, supervisory engineer in the FCC San Francisco office, said, was the cooperation of the local amateur community whose channels also were being jammed. We'd like to take this opportunity to extend our sincere appreciation for our recent assistance in locating and identifying the source of harmful interference to various police agencies in the San Francisco Bay Area. This was a difficult case because of the subject's sporadic behavior pattern and operation on numerous frequencies. The amateur radio community has always demonstrated a willingness to assist the commission in achieving compliance with the extant rules and regulations. Your actions in the instant case are an excellent example of this cooperative attitude. The following, by the way, is a first-person account of how amateurs put their direction-finding experience to work in locating this jammer. And I'm glad I just read that sentence, because I don't want to forget that the next T-Hunt, the next transmitter hunt, takes place this coming Saturday night. And John Moore would have shot me if I forgot this. This coming Saturday night, it's a West Side start, 7th Avenue and Camelback, the Target Shopping Center, 7th Avenue and Camelback, on the West Side, 7 p.m. sharp. Be there a 6:45. In fact, people are getting there earlier and earlier and earlier. But it's a 2-meter transmitter hunt, lots of fun. 14694 is used for getting everybody together there. But be there by 7 o'clock is when it starts. And I want to see new faces out there. It's so much fun. We have like 11, 12 people. I know it's the summertime, and so some people are on vacation. But we had 11, 12 teams a couple of months ago. I'd like to see it hit 15 or 20. That would be great. Can you imagine all the ham trucks and antennas rolling down? Everybody looks at us now when there's only 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. But could you imagine 20 trucks going by? My goodness. We would be in the newspaper. We would have such publicity. Anyway, don't forget the T-Hunt. West Side start this Saturday, 7 p.m. Here's an account by, then we'll get with with Dan Meredith in a minute. Chuck Vaughan, AA6G. Here's how Jack Mullen, K6CBL, and I cooperated in locating the person responsible for linking public service agencies with amateurs and with other agencies. See, transmitter hunts aren't just for fun. They really provide a service. We hone our skills on being able to find transmitters that shouldn't be operating where they are. We have waited until now to go public with this story because we wanted to let the FCC take action first. A group of South Bay area amateurs regularly use a 2-meter simplex frequency for local communications. In April of 91, we began receiving intentional interference from someone retransmitting police frequencies, a taxi cab service, and other similar services. Not only were we receiving interference from them, they were receiving interference from us. Jack quickly realized that someone was using a dual-band transceiver in the cross-band mode to link us on 2 meters with these services on UHF. Periodically, the linker would come on 2 meters and tell us if we didn't stop transmitting, we would lose our licensing for interfering with the police. We told him we knew what was going on, that we had called the FCC, and besides, we had dealt with jammers before and he had picked the wrong group to jam. We weren't going away. What the jammer didn't know was that we had been using this frequency for more than 10 years, and jammers had never been able to chase us away. He also didn't know that in the early 80s, I had done DFing, direction finding, for the Northern California DX Club during a long stint of foul-mouthed jammers on our club repeater. Jack took up the case for dealing with the public service agencies that were being jammed. He tried to explain that if we went off the air, the jammer would only move to another frequency, which he did, and they would still have the interference. This met with various levels of success. We had a working relationship with a San Francisco taxi cab company so they could get their calls through, but some of the police departments were less than friendly. When Jack contacted the City of Newark Police Department when they were being linked, he found that they were really in a pinch because they only had one frequency. After this went on for a couple of weeks, I decided it was DFing time. Using a Doppler DF system, you hear that, John? Dopplers do work. From the NCDXC jamming days, I set up the 4 antennas on my truck, called over Keith Butts, KN6K, to help me calibrate the system with my mobile rig as the receiver, and waited for an opportunity. We had already done some preliminary DFing from our homes with our 2-meter beams and determined the linker was in the Menlo Park, Redwood City area, directly west across the bay from me in Fremont. Jack and I had already agreed that he engaged in the linker and try to keep him talking when I was mobile. It wasn't long before the linking started. Jack took up his post, and I jumped into my pickup and headed across the bay. About halfway across the Dumbarton Bridge, the linker had a solid signal and the DFer a solid reading. I took Highway 101 north, had barely driven a mile when the direction on the DFer switched from northwest to southwest. I had passed him. I got off the freeway, let the DFer be my guide through unfamiliar neighborhoods. Good thing wasn't in central Illinois. All this time, Jack was doing a yeoman's job at keeping the linker talking. When I got very close, I carefully went up and down 2 streets that produced a rapid change in the direction shown on the DFer. I finally got a solid bearing on one house. It was now dark and no antennas could be seen. Worse yet, I couldn't even see a house number. I took numbers from adjacent houses, noted how far the house was from the corner, and the name of the street. I left. This all took just 45 minutes. When I got back home, Jack looked up potential hams in the area using a backwards call book and found one with an address between the 2 numbers I had. Jack drove down there the following day, spotted a dual-band omnidirectional antenna on a pole that I hadn't been able to see in the dark. He turned this information over to the FCC Field Operations Bureau office in Hayward. Later, the FCC engineer in charge and other FCC engineers visited me at home, where I showed them the DFing equipment and explained how we determined who was doing the linking. Based on this information, they were able to catch the linker in the act and put an end to his activities. Despite some earlier reports that many hams in the San Francisco Bay Area had helped with this case, Jack and I were, to the best of our knowledge, the only two who actively pursued the individual. During the year after I located the linker, It was interesting to listen to various reports in the ham media. Jack and I didn't know any of the people who were the sources for these reports and had never talked to them. Although the reports were not necessarily false, they were generally bits and pieces of the real story. This kind of jamming activities gives amateur radio a bad name. We were glad to be able to help the FCC to end it. I'm glad you let me indulge in that story, but I thought it was good that it shows that we hams could absolutely find an illegal transmitter and, you know, get them taken care of, and it can be done more than just on FCC frequencies. Obviously, it can be done on almost any frequency as long as we have the DFing equipment for it. I want to remind people that there's a shuttle up in the sky going around, the Earth orbiting, and if you didn't know that, and it is being retransmitted courtesy of the Amateur Television Group on cable channel 57, that is your cable-ready channel 57. You can pick it up, and they're retransmitting NASA Select, which is the 24-hour-a-day NASA information channel. And so if you're interested, tune your TVs, and you can watch it. You need to really be somewhere in the north central part or north Phoenix area, because if you're in Mesa, you're probably not going to catch it. But that's courtesy of the Amateur Television Group. Right, Forrest? Right, of course. Okay. All right. We're done. Now we're going to talk to you. Dan Meredith, N7MRP. Again, Mr. Guru, Mr. Packet. He has his own bulletin board, of course, along with a few other organizations that he has in, or he runs, or he directs, or he gets involved with. And one of the ones is, we'll talk about first just your organization, Arizona Intertie.
Yeah, the Arizona Network Intertie Group.
What is that? Tell us.
Basically what it is it's a group that we, myself and a few other amateurs that have been involved in putting together our funds and equipment to build up the Arizona Central node stack on White Tanks, and now the Pound East and Pound West, which is going to be going up on Pinal Mountain to connect into New Mexico all the way over into Texas. Currently, what we decided to do is figured, well, hey, let's, you know, see if we can't get some of the local amateurs to help us out. So we decided to form a group, and that's what we did. And now we have a small group that the other, there's various amateurs around the valley that have been helping support us. We don't have any fancy special meetings or anything, but anything they do to help us out, you know, goes into the fund account and helps keep our nodes on the air and pays the light bills.
Well, and I want to bring up before I forget that 145.11, which is really the packet repeater frequency, I mean, most used, I would say. Isn't that the busiest frequency for packet?
Yeah, around the valley.
Around the valley.
Yeah.
And it was down for about a week and a half or so.
Good week.
And I want to commend Barney Fagan, KB7KOE. I think this had some, was instrumental. At least it helped out, I'm sure. Of course, Barney directs the Packet Users Group, which meets at Denny's. The next time it meets is on the 15th, at the Dunlap and the Freeway. But at 8:30 a.m. But anyway, that's the Packet Users Group. He asked for donations to give to, we gave to Dan, who passed it on to Jim, was it?
No, to Joe Oliver. Yeah, I came in there and said, you know, they were asking me what's the matter with it, and I said, well, here's the following, you know, synopsis of what's going on. And they said, oh, well, how can we help? And I said, well, you know, help them out financially. That's what they need.
And so they collected close to $100.
That's right. And now it's back on the air.
And it's back on the air. And who knows? It could have been weeks if we didn't, you know, we pitched in $5, $10, whatever they wanted to put in. And we got the goal to purchase the, what was it, transformer?
The transformer and the
power supply.
And the power supply.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of people think that, for some reason, they have the idea that if you use a repeater, that, you know, somebody like this nebulous group is paying for all this. Well, some individual is actually paying for this, and, you know, we're using it and having the benefits of it. It's like the ARA and any other group like that. You should be willing, hopefully, if you want to utilize it, to partake and to become a member. I mean, ARA perfect example. I mean, you've got people that are on all the ARA repeaters 24 hours a day, and they don't belong to ARA. I mean, you know, I'm not saying, of course, it's an open repeater group, and they don't have to belong, but for the $15 or $20 that they're charging or whatever it is, I think they just raise it $24 a year, whatever it is, that's very minimal. Where can you get service, auto patch service and all that for $2 a month? I mean, it's just unheard of. And I want to say, I talked to Richard Jackson yesterday, and he told me that they've got 12 new members. I think he said 12, maybe he said more. I think it was 12 at Fort Tuthill. So that was kind of neat. But anyway, I want to commend Barney for having the packet users group, getting people who have packet in common together, and able to get some money to give to Joe Oliver to get.
And that really shows that a lot of people really do care, and that's the main purpose why we set up our group. You know, we now have funds. We were going to foot the bill, you know, for it if you know, nobody else you know, wanted to donate and help get it back in there. But as you can see, it's on the air and going now.
Excellent. And then, okay, we're talking about groups, so we'll talk about a new group. Fort Tuthill Ham Fest just took place, and I was told that there was a brand new group that was formed that's, I don't know if I should put it on the same level as, like, ARCA, but it is sort of an ARCA, I guess.
Very similar.
Where ARCA is the head of, not the head, but is like the umbrella for all the local amateur radio clubs in Arizona. There has been started an Arizona networking group.
Yeah, this group was designed, and it is like an umbrella. What we have done is anyone that's a node op, sys op, cluster op, somebody involved with the networking process of packet in the state of Arizona, what we've done is designed a group with all the folks that were there, and they said, yeah, let's really do something. We haven't had any central focal group that people that are involved with packet in the state of Arizona as a node op or whichever in the networking process, a way to disseminate information or coordinate activities throughout the state. Everybody's kind of done their own thing. So what we did was we all got together and we all had an idea. Let's try to form a group and see what everybody thought. And just that went over so well. You know, a few minutes into the meeting, we already had formed a group, and all it is basically set up. If anybody knows, excuse me, if anybody knows how the repeater owners meeting and group is set up, it's the exact same way. There's no membership, nothing like that. It's just you're a member if you have a node or BBS or whichever, and it's a way that we can disseminate information and everybody get together and coordinate what's happening within the state of Arizona. And we also, all the node ops and the BBS guys that were there, we adopted a special docket for network planning within the state of Arizona, which basically starts setting a standard for the networking process within Arizona, and that is circulating on packet right now, and it can be downloaded from your local BBS.
Okay, well, we're running a little bit late. Time flies when you're having fun, and we've got to take a break here. So you're listening to Ham Radio and More on KFNN. Our phone number, 230-2755, 230-2755, and we'll be back after we take care of a little business.
Hello, I'm Gary Siegelkoff, senior agent for Provident Mutual Life, represented in Arizona by National Financial Design. As an agent and manager in California and Oregon, I frankly had a wide choice of companies from which to choose when I relocated to Arizona. I chose Provident Mutual Life, a 126-year-old company with a reputation for strength, stability, and sound management, qualities that I would seek not only for my clients, but for myself and my career. Backed by supportive professional management and home office staff, Provident Mutual has enabled me to achieve the satisfaction, personal, and financial rewards that many strive for but seldom achieve. I'd like to invite you to join me with this success. Right now, we have three exceptional opportunities for men and women with initiative. If you're not achieving your potential with your present company, or if you're considering a career change, consider Provident Mutual, a company that's committed to you as well as your clients, not just for today, but for years to come. For an interview, call National Financial Design at 957-8888.
Why do some investors succeed in the market while others fail? What are the techniques professional investors use to help build winning portfolios? What do some investors know that you don't know? Look for the answer in Barron's, the business and financial weekly published by Dow Jones. Every week, Barron's gives its readers a close look inside today's markets. Every investment area, from stocks and bonds to futures, options, art, real estate, precious metals, anywhere there's money to be made. Every week, Barron's tells its readers not only what's happening in all those markets and why it's happening, but also what may be about to happen. You'll find useful investment news and views in every Barron's issue. Find out how the smart money gets that way. Pick up a copy at your newsstand this weekend, or to subscribe, call 800-345-8600. That's 800-345-8600 for Barron's.
Hi, I'm Grant Woods. Join me for consumer tips from the Attorney General's Office, weekly on AM 1510, Financial News Radio, KFNN.
You're listening to Ham Radio and More on KFNN. If you'd like to join in the conversation, call 230-2755. That's 230-2755. Or outside the local dialing area, call 1-800-293-KFNN. Now, with more about amateur radio, here's your host, Len Winkler.
Welcome back. And you're listening to Ham Radio and More, of course. I am Len Winkler, KV7LPW, and we have Dan Meredith here and 7MRP, and we're talking about Packet. And first we discussed all the groups and that are around. We finished talking at the break about the new Arizona networking group. Okay. So that's kind of neat. Now we got that. We'll call it the A-Z-N-G, right?
A-N-G. Yeah, A-Z-N-G, whatever.
A-Z-N-G, okay. Well, you guys should know better than me. It's your group.
Well, we just call it the Arizona Networking Group.
Okay.
That's all there is to it.
All right. Well, that's what it's called. And so now we've got an umbrella for Packet. And what is Packet?
Packet radio is basically, obviously, a digital communication that we use on amateur radio. What it does is when you get a TNC, or a terminal node controller, it's the interface between the computer and the radio, when you start sending things out, via this packet, it puts your information that you're trying to send out to station X on the other side of the street or whichever. It puts everything in a nice little formed packet. Just assume a package being sent across the street. We accept it's to being done over the radio, and it's an error-free setup. So if the guy doesn't get everything that was supposed to be contained in that packet, he gets sent back, and it does
keep
the whole thing doesn't get sent back, but it asks to send it again, and so it's virtually an error-free digital communication.
So you're sure that if you get an acknowledgement, you're sure that the person, the station you sent it to, received it in its entirety.
In its entirety.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, before we get into nodes, you have changed on your bulletin board your software, which, you know, the old software was easy to understand. Everybody knew it. And I mean, not that this new one isn't, of course, easy, but it has changed a lot.
It's not easy by any means.
Oh, well,
I'll even say I have trouble with some of the things on there. It's thrown everybody, if I might say, for a loop. it's definitely different. You know, it used to be quite simple to go and get files off of it. Now it's a little bit more complex because you have to go into DOS. And for folks that aren't used to DOS, they don't know how to get half of these files. You actually go onto my hard drive into these areas that are allotted for you to use and can download the files as if you were on your IBM PC.
You mean you do DIR just like you do?
Exactly. You would type D for DOS and go in there, and it puts you in a directory, and you type DIR, get a return. It gives you all the directories. You can change back and forth.
CD, you have to do...
Yeah, change directory and move around like you were on your own IBM PC. So the folks that have Commodore computers, this is a whole new world for them.
And they can, of course, do it.
Sure, you bet. It moves around on my hard drive in those areas that are allotted for their use.
And what do you have anything really that is different than any of the other bulletin boards have, other than the software being a little more complex? And KB7 or TV has the same software?
He has the exact same software, and what he has is different is he has the callbook server by Sam's. I don't know, I'm sure a lot of folks that were at Fort Tuthill stopped by the Sam's booth and played with the callbook server. It's the exact same thing, the same software that you're playing with, and he has that on his call system, and when you connect in, it tells you how to do it. On the main menu screen that you get when you first connect. My system, the big difference is I am the KJ6FY mod server, which is the 800 plus, I think it's up to almost 1,000 mods in there now, and it really works my poor hard drive to death when somebody
How
does
big of a hard drive do you have?
The one that the BBS is on is 40 megs. I have a backup drive, which is 106.
Oh, I was going to say 40 doesn't sound like it's big enough.
It is, actually.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of the files are small, and most of the stuff gets compressed, so I haven't had a problem yet. However, if that particular drive quits, I've got another drive just instantly already set up, and I could be right back on the air, thank goodness. I had that happen. My hard drive went out. And it was a nightmare getting it replaced. I have the mod server. I also have the American Frequency Guide, which has various public service frequencies all over the country. There's some military stuff in there for those that like to listen to some of the military nets and stuff they have on HF, and a shortwave listeners database also on there.
So now you can get all of that just by going into your... into your hard drive.
Connecting into the board.
Because it used to be you would ask and you would bring it back in a half hour, an hour or something.
That's still available too because I have nationwide responses oftentimes, and that's using the RecFill server. And in fact, bulletins just went out once again on how to properly do that. So just do an L less than and do N7MRP and you'll get a whole list of whatever's come out from me. And then you could look through the various bulletins. A whole bunch came out just last night. There's a lot there. There really is.
How many pieces of information bulletins are being passed nationwide every day on packet? I see. My God.
I generally pick up anywhere from 50 to 100. The last month, for July, I keep a tally on how much traffic has gone through there. I had 6,535 bulletins. Come through there. Pieces of traffic altogether. That was a total of bulletins, personal, and NTS. That's for 1 month. 6,000 messages.
Well, I'm going to ask a real stupid question before. How much time do you devote to passing this information? I mean, if someone leaves a message on your bulletin board that needs to be brought to K7BUC or needs to go to New York or whatever, how much time do you spend, or does it forward it automatically?
Most of it I have, once I have the bugs worked out, it's all automatic. I have backup paths, so if it tries station X back east on the telephone and doesn't get there, it goes to a different station and tries him and seeing, and so I usually have 2 to 3 backup paths in case that station that I attempt to connect to doesn't get there.
Well, walk me through this. I go N7MRP and I put in a message that I want to send to my friend in New York.
Okay.
I finished it. I disconnected from your bulletin board. And now, does it go immediately or is it being sent right then?
It all depends on we have special times set up, like I do telephone forwarding, and it could wait that extra few hours to hit at 1 o'clock in the morning where the phone rates are cheap, and it sends it right back there,
so
and
you're
it's there
paying for,
overnight.
You're paying for the phone rate?
Yeah, it comes out of my own pocket.
So did you know that guy? A lot of this stuff is sent over phone lines?
A lot of it is. However, I try to utilize to the fullest extent the AmTOR system via W5VBO out in Peoria. I give the bulk of all my traffic there. What he does is he tells me where he has a direct path with in the United States, and then I go through my forward files. And usually, I look over everything about once a month and make sure things have been going where it's supposed to. So on average, a lot of the messages will be delivered overnight.
So your machine is going to contact NSEV, VBO, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is going to...
Automatically
to find out the paths, and then it's going to go to there, and it's going to be forwarded on AmTOR back east, probably.
Mm-hmm. And then it gets converted back to packet wherever it's going to go out to.
Now, if it can't go on AmTOR, then it's going to go over a phone line probably later.
Either that, or we have also an HF, another HF BBS. It's a 300 baud setup.
So that's fairly slow.
Not necessarily if it gets there overnight.
Oh, well, that's fast.
You know, you can't ask for much better than that.
No, you can't get the mail overnight. My goodness.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for the phone line. Sometimes, you know, the personal messages are just getting lost all over the place. And it's not necessarily because of the bans or anything else. It's some operators don't seem to care. However, I will say many do. But sometimes it just goes through so many routes just to get to one spot, it could take several days. And that's why I enjoy using the phone line. It's cheap, for one. I'm on an excellent package with the customer, the group that I belong with for the long distance. And so far I've had nothing but good luck. And I have people calling me from all over the United States in the middle of the night that forward into it.
Interesting. If there are certain things that I put on a packet bulletin board that if you give to Brian, or is it Brian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, goes on AmTOR. It can't go on AmTOR. I was told that there's things that certain characters in packet that won't translate to AmTOR.
It turns out to be some weird character. Your message, if you used to type it in lowercase, used to come out in all caps when it got to the other end. That has since been taken care of, and they're working on doing the entire full ASCII set on AmTOR. Whether that has finally been completely accomplished with all characters or not, I do not know. However, you can have upper and lowercase on AmTOR now, which is great.
Okay, I think it was that I couldn't use quotation marks, or I couldn't use an exclamation point, or a comma. There was something.
The pound sign is still gets messed up, if I'm not mistaken, by some stations.
I knew there were some, and Dell told me that, KSMB.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean it can't get translated? He says, yeah, you write very graphic things with that's right, I did some with uppercase and some lowercase to accentuate, and he says, you can't do that.
It used to all get moved to caps, and if I'm not mistaken, Dell did upgrade to the upper and lowercase format, too, so. Should be working.
Okay, well, we're talking to Dan Meredith, N7MRP, and our phone number is 230-2755, 230-2755, or 1-800-293-KFNN. And, you know, get online. Give us a call. Dan loves to answer questions, and something about the hardest questions, the better, he said. So, anyway.
No, I did not say that.
Oh, I was sure I heard you say that.
No.
Oh, okay. We have a real, real, real easy trivia question coming up. So I mean real easy. But, you know, if you want to ask him a trivia question, you know, give him prize. Anyway, before I take another break here, tell us, what is a node?
Well, the purpose of a node is, and generally we'll just speak of something up on a mountain. Purpose of a node is to... basically like a repeater, very similar, except most time it's on simplex, such as my 05 node on white tanks. The purpose of it is so, you know, station Y down in the valley can get up to the mountain. He sends his information into this node, and it basically just takes his information and repeats it to another station that's maybe on the other side of the mountain. Basically, all it is a relay.
It's a repeater.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's all it is, except it's on simplex.
Okay. So, okay, now if I connect to, Phoenix on 11, is that simplex? Isn't that a repeater?
It's a complete repeater. You're obviously doing, you're not full duplex. You know, like when you're talking voice, you're still half duplex. However, it's basically the same setup.
Explain that to me, because that went right over. What do you mean half duplex?
Well, if it was full duplex, you would be able to transmit and receive at the same time.
Okay, right.
So you would hear data coming back to you acknowledging while you're still transmitting. So you're half duplex at all times still. You can only transmit at once and not receive at the same time. Mm-hmm. So when you unkey, then you receive. If you're full duplex, you'd be doing both at the same time, so your system would be continuously keyed.
Okay. Okay.
And the only the benefit of the 511 system or systems exactly like it is that you don't have to use a particular node such as PHX to connect into it, give it your traffic, and then have it repeated out. You can go direct to between stations, so you don't have to. The only thing that's in between you is, of course, the repeater itself passing the traffic out again. So you don't have something in between what you have to send to, then it acknowledges you, and then it sends it again. It's a direct shot.
But Phoenix seems to have a lot of nodes that it is doing and talking back and forth.
It now sees Arizona Central at the same time, too. It's tied in now.
Now it seems to have increased because I know I hit a node list.
Yeah,
there's a lot more.
You can get to Mount Lemmon from PHX now. You can get to Arizona Central from PHX. They're all tied together now.
Well, we're going to talk about AEA's new product. And, I mean, this is the Rolls Royce, I would guess, I could say, of multi-mode data controllers. Because, I mean, the PK-232 is, what, $300 and some? And that's great. The PK-88, I'm not sure what that is, but it's not that expensive, $150 or something like that.
I think it's a little bit lower.
Even lower than that?
It's pretty much in competition with the other groups.
Okay. And then you can even get the new PK-88, which is another terminal node controller that fits into your computer. And so you don't even need a separate unit. But they have just come out. Well, actually, they've been advertising this for a while, but now it's finally being shipped. The DSP-2232. It's not cheap. That's why I said the Rolls Royce. It's not a giveaway product. It is expensive, but it is the next generation for packet. And I mean, but I'll be honest and tell you that I think you'd be foolish to purchase the 2232 if all you're going to do is packet, because it's got so much in there. It's like you're overkill. They utilize the new or the latest digital signal processing, which is what the DSP, of course, stands for, technology. They announced a major breakthrough with the 1232. It has two switchable ports they have two simultaneous ports, not switchable, they're simultaneous. So it'll show two different things at the same time, or use two different radios. From the company that introduced the first multi-mode data controller, of course, with packet and fax, the PK-232, which is still the largest selling in the world. I mean, they've sold over 50,000 PK-232s. I mean, that's mind-boggling when you consider there isn't that many amateurs in the world, that they sold over 50,000 of one product. This is the next generation to blast you in the future. This is what you've been waiting for. It's the most advanced and adaptable data controller on the market. Its capabilities are limited basically only by your imagination. Both the 2232 has the hardware, all the hardware included for all available amateur data modes that are now available, and as new modes become available, all that's required is a replacement EEPROM or a telephone BBS downloaded binary file. Available now are all the PK-232 modems plus PacSat, Oscar 13, and Oscar 15 satellite modems, the K9NG and G3RUH 9600 bit per second modems, the multi-gray scale WeatherFax, the WeatherFax APT, as well as slow scan TV. Any desired FS tone pair can be programmed for the DSP units, as well as QAM and QPSK or other specialized modems. I won't even ask Dan what those are because he may not know, which makes these DSP modems. Do you know what they are?
I know the G3URH.
What is it?
It's a 9600 baud modem.
Yeah, well, I said that.
Oh, I know.
Oh, okay.
And so is the K9NG.
Oh, well, this has a 9600 mode baud capabilities, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of that's the first real big thing I see about this.
If it has them both, that's a big advantage.
Well, it does. I mean, from what they say,
This is the thing. And what is DSP, or what is digital signal processing? Well, it provides a new level of performance and versatility. The input analog system is digitized by a 12-bit high-speed analog-to-digital convertible. The digitized data is then processed by a very fast specialized computer. It's actually the Motorola 56001 running at 24 megahertz. That is pretty fast, you know, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
To digitally filter and analyze the data signals. The processed demodulated signals are then passed to a second processor, the Zilog or Zilog 64180 for protocol conversion. The advantage of DSP? Its versatility. As new modems or modes only require new software, no new hardware or modifications are required for new modes. It has a unique LCD readout on the DSP2232, which displays the mode and diagnostics for both channels. It's upgradable. It can be upgraded later if you decide you want additional features, although I don't know what they could possibly be. It includes all, like I said, all the PK232 data control features, including pack mail, mailbox with selective control of third-party traffic and BBS compatibility, so you can automatically forward your messages, something we'll get into a little bit later. And in packet, the DSP is also compatible with the TCP/IP networking protocol. This requires data controller to feature special commands such as KISS, persistence, and slot time, not found in all controllers. Additional features which include fax printing, time division multiplex, they will decode TDM signals. By the way, TDM is a mode that resembles FEC mTOR and is used in commercial applications. It uses one subcarrier but assigns separate data channels to different time slots. It also has another commercial coding scheme. The DSP controllers can receive and decode FDM signals. It sends the different data channels over separate subcarriers, each at different frequencies. All that tells me is that the 2232 is one heck of a machine if it does all these things. And AEA has not been known for coming out with things that don't work. So they do work. It's just, it is expensive. I've seen it listed about $1,000, but I've seen it discounted fairly. I think you're going to save a few dollars off of that if you buy it from HRO or, you know, basically anywhere. AEA... a lot of their products are not sold at list price, but I can't honestly tell you because I don't know what HRO is selling it for. I don't believe they've had one in stock yet, but tell Gary you want one. The 2232 at HRO, 17th Avenue and Camelback. One thing I'll say about AEA, their products really are super. Whatever it be, whether you buy the VSB70 amateur television transceiver, whether you buy the PK232, the 2232, I can tell you, if you go into HRO and buy the 2232 and then get on packet, Forrest will come over. I'm not Forrest. Dan will come over because he wants to see the 2232 working. So AEA, where the action's at. All right. We've only got a couple of minutes left before the news here. And we're talking about what is a node. Let's just define a few more things. In the next hour, we'll really hop into the mechanics of doing things. What is a switch?
A switch, all that really is basically the same as a node. What it does is it takes you in on one frequency. You connect to it, say, on 145.05, and there's another, say, 2 meter frequency, say 511, such as I had at my house at one time. You could come in on 145.05. Then type the proper port, whichever is set up to go out on 111, and connect your buddy that may be on 145.11. It just takes you in on one frequency, puts you out on another, just switches you around. That's all it does. That's the basic. That's as basic as you can get about a switch.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious because I see this is a switch, this is a node, and what is a gateway?
Gateways are very similar, except you utilizing say a BBS. That doesn't have this so-called switch, and you go into the gateway feature and specify whichever port you want to go out on.
Do all BBSs have that?
No. The only ones that are currently, the old W0RLI version used to have that. However, the newest FBB has that. RLI no longer has it. So the only one I know of that currently has it is FBB.
Okay, so because I thought that would be interesting if I can get, because I know sometimes I can get into a BBS that I know of in some place, but I can't get into a node for some reason. And
that's the exact reason for having it.
Interesting. Okay, I've seen you have a caller, Van KG70S. Hopefully we have time, otherwise I'll hold you up till after the news. What's your question?
Okay, hi. The new AEA TNC, the DSP unit.
Yes, sir.
Does that include, but I doubt, to include the PECTOR, but I think originally...
I don't see it saying PECTOR, it says PECTOR.
I don't think it does, but you were discussing it, and I thought I'll give you a call and see.
Like doing BBSing, connecting to BBSs or getting node lists back and forth, it's obviously going to... start to just back up, because it has to disseminate this information to each of the same people, and I can all of a sudden hear now. anyway,
forest is good at his job.
It can back up. It really can. I've the maximum I've ever seen, and that was while 1-1 was down, was 10 people on at once, and who knows what all was happening on 05.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was always wondering how many people could connect and get...
Well, if it starts to run out of memory room and things start to back up, it will tell another person it's busy. Or somebody that is connected and tries to connect out to another node, it will say, sorry, node tables are full.
Now, does this ever happen? I'm sure it doesn't. But does it ever happen that we'd be connected and... go to another node, or go to another, or whatever, move around, and that somebody decides to bump you off for some reason?
Almost impossible unless they were to connect with your call sign somewhere in the loop.
So you're saying that it's almost impossible for someone just to knock you off just because they, for some reason, don't want you on there?
Yeah, unless they're the node op and see you doing something wrong, which most of the folks will try to contact you first and say, hey, you're doing this, could you please stop? And oftentimes the other guys say, oh, I didn't even realize that, and then it's, everything's hunky-dory after that. No, it's almost impossible. At least with the software today, as I know it, I can't do that.
Geared toward the person who is on packet now and wants to know these things. When I get into a node, let's talk about Arizona Control. I always
Central.
Call it Arizona Central. I always like Control.
No, it's not Control.
Okay, Arizona Central. And you hit a question mark or H for help. What are the commands that are possible to be utilized on that particular node?
Well, you've got connect by BYE to just disconnect from it. You have an information called info. If you were to type info, it'd give you some information about the node. You could do nodes, N-O-D-E-S, ports, roots, and users.
Okay, so that's basically what almost all nodes have.
Just about all of them. In the newest, latest, greatest is called the herd list. It's mHerd on White Tanks, and the new Thenet Plus 2.10 is herd.
And that is to give you a listing of
who it's herd on a particular port. You don't have to specify a port on Thenet Plus 2.10. Just type herd, and it'll tell you who it's herd on that particular frequency. On our White Tank site, you type MH space and the port that you want to know about, because there's so many on that particular node. Mm-hmm. So if you type MH space port 1, which is the user port on 145.05, it would tell you who all it has heard and give you a time, what time it heard them.
Okay. All right. Now, if I hit R, routes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me what the difference between routes and paths are.
Well, they're basically the same thing. The path is going to be the same thing as a route.
Okay.
Consider them the same. If you type R for routes, what you're going to get
As an example would be, you'd see something saying AK7Z-1, N7MRP-1, W7MCF-9. It's what that is it shows you what other nodes it knows about and what route and port it's on. It would show you who all it can talk to as a node. So AK7Z-1 is a route on port 2, for example. So you could connect to AK7Z-1 and it would talk to it as a node just by typing connect AK7Z-1.
So what's the difference between doing that and hitting N for node?
N for node shows you everything it knows.
Okay.
As in the various nodes that you can go to, which can be way far away. A route only shows you who your neighbor is to that node. And when you do nodes, it shows all the nodes that your neighbors have given to this particular setup.
Okay, now when you hit bit of information on there, it'll say, it'll have like a less than or more than sign I've seen,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll give a number like 167, and then it'll give another number like 1, then another number like 2, and then, like what you're showing, and then it'll have a call sign. Okay, explain what each of these things mean.
Okay, the little carrot that I like to call it, which is going to be a greater than or less than, whichever it is, I can't think off the top of my head. What that is it tells you that that particular route is active and being used at the present time, and they're talking back and forth. If that carrot is not there, that means they're no longer talking to each other. It might still exist, they just haven't had any communication for a period of 15 minutes, and they disconnect from each other, the nodes do. So there's no activity on that particular route. So when you go to connect to something, that carrot will change and come up, and it will show that there's activity on that particular route. Now, the numbers that you're referring to, such as you said 167, mm-hmm. That's a path quality. 240 is a backbone. 255 is two TNCs tied together by wire, like...
So that's
through the RS-232 ports, and 192 is going to be over the user frequency, such as 145.01. All the nodes that talk to each other would have qualities of 192, and then on HF would be 180.
Okay, so if I see 162,
that would be a for some reason they're backing the quality off because the path isn't very good to that particular station. There might be a better path, and they don't want it to propagate as far in a nodes table when it goes to tell the other station, well, I have the following station at 162. If that's below a special limit set on the other station, it won't pick that node up and put it in its table.
Okay, I did it. Now, I know one of the interesting features is hitting an N for node, and then a space, and then the call sign that you want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you the routes.
I highly suggest doing that.
Okay, so I did that,
mm-hmm.
and it showed me 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first one had that carrot.
Yes.
And it had a 167. The next two had like 142, and the last one had like 130-something. So what am I supposed to do at that point?
The backup routes. Connect to the one that has the highest quality.
Now, that had a carrot.
And it had a carrot. It means that particular route to that station, maybe not to the same node, but to the particular route that it shows how to get to it,
mm-hmm.
is active. That just says that that path is open. That's what's being used at the present time.
Well, so I do, but I did a connect to that particular node,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't get connected to it. So that's why I hit this other thing to see if maybe I need to do something there. So how do you do that? Just connect, and again, I'm going to do the same thing, connect in the call sign.
Yeah, that's correct. Connect in the call sign that you showed that had the highest quality. Always try the highest quality first. It could be just so busy, and mm-hmm. you could be a long ways off and not even get the response back for a few minutes. Oftentimes when things are hopping out on user frequencies, who knows what's going on the other end. And the quality numbers, they decrease at each node.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers keep dropping. If they didn't, you know, you'd have nodes from all over the world on your nodes table and it wouldn't get anywhere. But the numbers decrease at each particular node.
Okay, one question I just had. what's the difference between what's the difference between the node PHX and the node pound sign PHX?
Okay, the node pound sign PHX is a backbone node. It's on, they call it a hidden node. The reason being is because it's on a backbone. You shouldn't have to go